Okay, thank you all for coming to our little kind of discussion. It's very informal, and we're going to be talking about whether religious belief is good for your sexual health. So if you kind of think about those words, you know, like what the different kind of things you're thinking, does anyone want to start off with just saying, like, is religious belief good for your sexual health? Stuart? I mean, none of us talk
I think religion partly, or religious belief, is partly about discovering what it is to be human and what it is to have a relationship with that which we label God or Allah, but which we mean the significant other. So I think in becoming truly human, religious belief is important. It helps us understand who we are within the creative purpose that is life. So I think it can be very positive where faith actually encourages you to ask questions about what does it mean for me to be a person, and to what extent does my personhood bring responsibilities in the way I relate and treat and use and interact with another human being. So I think in a broad sense, very much so. And I think it's quite easy. What tends to happen in religious conversation is that we get very lazy. So rather than actually wrestle with the issues that the ultimate reality throws on us as human beings, it's much easier to get dogmatic and to have theological statements that really, rather than open up our humanity, actually restrict it. And I think that's where you get the dichotomy between religious belief and sexual health. It isn't that people are empowered to ask what does it mean to be human and to have a relationship with another human being. It becomes literally a list of do's and don'ts. And that's when it becomes destructive.
I do agree that a list of rules and regulations is generally not healthy at all. I think that if your religion means that there is no relationship or no involvement with the God, no understanding of why you're following these rules or these regulations, then it becomes pointless and people become frustrated and they don't know what they're doing, and I don't think that's healthy in any way, shape or form. But on the other hand, I think that actually kind of sexuality is, you know, I do believe that it is something that is a gift that's given to us and something that, you know, is to be enjoyed, but actually can also be destructive. And so I think that, for example, you know, I'm a Christian and I believe that what's in the Bible is because there's a God who loves us so much that he doesn't want us to be hurt or to do things that are bad for us. And so to actually follow the kind of the instruction, the teaching of the Bible, is to do what's best for me and for anybody else. And so actually that means that kind of sex is therefore, you know, it's the best way that it can ever happen. But I really don't believe that just having a list of do's and don'ts is any use to anybody, apart from you might not get an STI. But ultimately there are more important things.
At the moment, are we kind of talking about the emotional side of sexual health, that kind of idea? Or do you think, I don't know.
Well, I think it has, like, obviously, I think if you are monogamous and you only ever sleep with one person, then there are obvious health benefits to that in the fact that you're, you know, you don't have to be concerned. Obviously, both of you have to be faithful to one another, otherwise it gets a bit more tricky. But obviously, yeah, in a perfect world, if anyone only had one partner, then there wouldn't be STIs.
Or like a continuing spread of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure exactly how STIs started. I think I can't imagine that if everyone was monogamous from the start, I don't think they would ever really exist.
Has everybody been monogamous from the start? That's the
no. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's obviously not happened. But yeah, like I think that today's society definitely wants to kind of give this image that sex is something that it is just physical, and if it's not, then it's only kind of marginally emotional, and this is something that actually you can kind of heal very quickly from. Or, but just from kind of experience of talking to some of my friends who've had bad experiences and relationships that have broken down, you can just see that's just not true. And so I'm just kind of like, well, why are people believing that this is the case when it's clearly not? And I find it outrageous that people believe these lies and that they live their lives thinking that one thing's the case and then finding out that it's not. And yet they still think that kind of society or their peers or teen magazines is the best place to look for advice.
I think you've touched on like quite an interesting issue, like bringing in this whole kind of advertising media idea of treating sex in general as quite a disposable thing that's very easy to come by, very easy, you know, you get, like you're saying, you get over it very quickly. When in terms of personal experience, like even if you're not religious, like there's still that kind of hurt. But I think that maybe with that kind of additional religious belief, that reinforces like what you were saying earlier about you know, having understanding human experience and kind of enjoying it in a purposeful way rather than kind of putting yourself through things and damaging yourself and getting hurt.
Yeah, I mean, as a Muslim, we have a very positive attitude towards sex, but it is in sort of in confined space in that sense, and that's with your lawful married partner. And so when you do within that lawful manner, then you're actually rewarded for it. And as a man who came to the Prophet and speaking to him, may peace be upon him, and he was asking, say, whether there is a reward in having sex or with a partner, and the Prophet said, If you did something like that outside the marriage, it would be a sin, and therefore, if you did it within the lawful way, then you'll be rewarded for that. So, you know, I personally feel that it's very good to have that clear guideline, because a lot of people these days just don't know. Because everybody else is doing it, therefore it's okay to do it. And I have to personally say that I didn't get involved in it because I knew it was a major sin. Mm-hmm. And it was only, in my mind, would only happen after marriage. And that's how in our family, you know, our brothers and sisters, that's how we're brought up, that's how we... Nobody ever told us literally, oh, you can't do this. No, I mean, I don't ever remember anybody saying that to me, but we knew that that's what the teachings are and that's what we do. And it just keeps us healthier.
And it sounds like a really sensible, you know what I mean? Like, and I think a lot of, well, maybe like all religions, you know, get a kind of a bad press about being really restrictive about sexuality, you know, and not wanting anyone to have any fun, you know, and all that kind of idea. But from what you're saying, it's not like that at all. It's not restrictive, it's supportive.
Yes.
You know, it's that we, you know, what you're describing, you here's this space and this is your support kind of thing. Whatever you do within that, and you know, you can have pleasure and all this kind of stuff. But yes, you've got that same supporting structure as well. You're not kind of, you know, vulnerable to other horrible situations happening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when... this is a general teaching. If someone comes and asks you to be their girlfriend or boyfriend, you're sort of saying, what for? You know, it's like, are you interested in marriage? Then yes, I'll talk to you and we'll have a discussion and maybe I might like you and we'll get married. But, you know, if he's really sincere or is really interested, then if he'd be saying, you know, I'm interested in marriage and that's why I'd like to talk to you. And then you know right from the beginning why we're here. We're not here just to have a bit of fun and then goodbye. And as I said earlier, that it can cause a lot of emotion, heartache, you know. And so it just stops all that. And of course, it doesn't mean to say that people don't fall in love and they don't do the wrong thing and so on. But generally speaking, that's if you know... you take that as in, you know, your guidance from the teachings of the Quran and the Prophet, then you're more, you know, likely to not cause a lot of heartache for yourself.
I think there's a twofold problem. I think in terms of society, sex is a commodity rather than a commitment. It's like going to the supermarket and buying your favourite brand of beans. So actually, it's actually dehumanising. We actually have set a society where we don't recognise each other as special gifts as another human being. So I think on one side, society wants to make sex nothing more than a commodity. It's just one of those things that happens. So we don't take each other seriously as human beings. The other side of the coin is that we actually allow sex to shape everything. And one of the things that I often find in relationships is that often sex gets in the way. I mean, once you start having sex, that becomes awkward. It's a bit like cigarette smoking. It becomes addictive. And actually, rather than make couples closer, it gets in the way of getting to know each other. And one of the strengths, to use the model that you shared with us, is that why can't we spend time getting to know each other as human beings? You know, if the sex is bad, there's always ways to get help.
Mm, yes.
But if the relationship's not solid, all the sex in Christendom or across the world isn't going to make a difference. You know, but we're obsessed with sex. It's a commodity by which we judge the value of another person, by which we judge the depth of a relationship, you know. And it's becoming absolutely obsessive. And it isn't that religious people are anti. It's actually we're saying we're devaluing humanity and devaluing one another because it's become obsessive.
I agree with what you said. It does sort of get in the way. Instead of just waiting and getting to know the person, and then, you know, after marriage, having that relationship, then, as a Muslim, for me, you know, once you like the person, then when you get married, it's afterwards you do your best to enjoy your life, learn about each other, help each other, protect each other. So, the whole process of real intimacy begins after marriage. But prior to that, you know, you're not, even if you like each other, we don't really have physical contact. And that's just, you know, to once you've had the marriage contact, then basically it's everything is possible. But then commitment comes along with that, you see. And I think I do believe personally that the women are the ones who suffer on the whole. A man can just walk away from it. She may get pregnant, she may have to have an abortion, and that leaves so many scars in a person's, you know, life and so on. So, you know, having some solid guidelines really does help.
And for me as a Christian, the model for me has to be Jesus, who actually had relationships with all sorts of very undesirable people. And the religious people of his day actually got quite cross with him for doing that. He'd talk to tax collectors, publicans, prostitutes. He'd talk to people who were outside, really, the pale of normal religious observance. But there's never anything untoward about that relationship. Jesus actually displays a way of valuing, of seeing beyond the accretions to seeing the person. And I think that's a wonderful model for humanity to have, where we actually don't see each other as sexual objects. We see each other as divinely created people. One of the strengths I find, actually, even though I'm a Christian, I find a tremendous strength in the example of Jesus in dealing with people in a loving, open way. But I actually find it quite liberating to see the way in which the Prophet recognised that sometimes we're fallible human beings, and not to get ourselves into situations where good intentions can actually become destructive. And I think it's actually finding that balance between both examples. It's actually, you know, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And I think that really needs to be the model for relationship. I mean, I think the issue about sex is a red herring, and that's the thing that people like to bang on about when they're talking about religion. Trouble with religion, it's all anti-sex or it's all about sex. Actually, we don't want people to discover what it is to be human and to be valued.
I think one of the sayings we have in Islam is that sex is actually gives you a taste of paradise. Again, lawfully done within marital relationship. So this is a beautiful way of describing, you know, having sex and what you would feel is sort of like a little bit of paradise. When I came across it, I thought it was really, really wonderful. Way of,
it makes it more special rather
yes,
than,
yeah.
Oh, here's a tin of baked beans that, you know, got from the shop.
So we've got quite a lot of stuff in here, but please
do. No, I was going to say, like, maybe we could
say.
Go around and now we've kind of opened up some of the issues going on and set the scene, as it were. I mean, maybe some of you guys over there?
Yeah, I've just been listening. If anything, to be honest, is, you know, listening to what's been said so far has been absolutely fantastic. I wouldn't like to jump first because people do make points and you do leverage those points. And I think there are commonalities, especially between Christianity, Islam, Judaism. There are most certainly common elements. And the one thing that I did like that was mentioned was this model that has been put into place. Personally, as a Muslim, I'm proud to say that God, who created the human beings, knows what is best for them, ultimately. And if we were to shrink this example down to a mother and a child example, where the mother who has had more experience or who knows more about life than her child, she would advise them. And she would tell them that, you know, if you were to go down this path, then, you know, these are the potential harms, these are the potential consequences. It's best if you take this route. And ultimately, it is, in the end, what it really boils down to is to safeguard a person from harm. But not only harming themselves, but harming others. I think one issue that is currently present, especially in liberal society, is that where the world revolves around the person. And that is that if I can get away from a situation where, you know, basically the whole thing just revolves around the person ultimately, whether the harm is specifically towards them, whether the benefits are specifically towards them, and that's what makes a person able to walk into a sexual relationship. You know, generally speaking, you know, if we look at, you know, amount of men who would walk into a sexual relationship and walk out, and the woman is left with, you know, having to deal with potentially a child, having to deal with emotional heartbreak, and obviously the harm can also be felt by the man. But this ability to be able to walk in and just as easily to be able to walk out with no thorough, I suppose, consideration, or not looking at the situation from multiple perspectives, rather you are looking about it through your own self. I think that can become destructive in a more society basis. If every person is thinking about this, and if every person is adopting this model about me, and what I can gain and what I can feel, and if everybody's thinking that this way, and the whole society begins to spread this model of thought, then we end up in situations that our society currently suffers from, especially the British society.
I think you've hit right, you know, the nail on the head right there. This whole kind of egotistic, you know, kind of touching on everything that's kind of gone before.
Yeah.
And if you're just in there for yourself, you know, whatever you do, you don't care about anyone else, you're just there. And then you kind of spread, like, not only, you know, kind of like if you upset someone, like if you walked into a relationship and then walked out again and you upset someone, they're going to go into a relationship and have that model and use it again, you know, to kind of retaliate in some way, and then it just spreads and spreads and spreads. And even with this very tenuous link with kind of sexual, you know, STDs, that kind of stuff, you know, I read about cases of HIV, you know, deliberate transmission.
Yes.
And that kind of idea is just really appalling.
Yeah.
You know, how can you do that in a relationship? And I think this kind of egotistical idea that we all have of ourselves, or what, you know, I don't want to like blame society as that kind of big cloak thing, but
it's the people who make society,
you know, yeah. And but it's been adopted, and you know, like, even if you try your hardest to kind of think of others, like, it's so easy to slip back into, you know, oh no, but what if, you know, what if I, something happens to me, this whole me thing that you're talking about. That's terrible. That's hurt. Oh, that's so sad.
Well, that just reminded me of what the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, he created a community. It wasn't sort of like society based on individuals, but rather as in community, that people should take care of each other. And when the Meccans who came in from having to flee from persecution from Mecca, and they came into Medina, each family took one person in and helped them and gave them everything. That, and that sort of model of a community of helping people, and in terms of marriage as well, they were helping each other. I mean, I get at the university here, students coming to me and asking me to help them find partners. And it might sound would you really do that, you know, for other people, but within Muslim communities it's quite common, people coming to you and asking you, can you find somebody, this is the sort of thing I'm looking for, do you know, instead of a person approaching, because sometimes they feel they might give the wrong signals, they want to do it in the right way, so they approach somebody they feel can, you know, if they approach the other person, it's better for them.
A bit more neutral.
Yeah, so it very much to do with community, how community helps each other, finding a right sexual partner, or, you know, married partner, talking in the language of sex here. That's very, very helpful to people.
I mean, I always think a lot of this is actually a distortion. It's a bit like, you know, it's a bit like medical illnesses often, where things get distorted, or, you know, cancer's a distortion of the cell reproduction. And I think what we've actually got, we've got a distortion of the... We are important as individuals. God's created us to be who we are. You know, who we are is God's unique gift to us. Now, that's important, and I wouldn't want to lose that. But then we actually distort that into, as you were saying, instead of recognising it as a gift, it becomes a right that gives us the right to exploit others. But the gift that's the uniqueness of me is also true of another human being. And the way I relate and build relationships with those needs to affirm and recognise that. I would hate people, because the other side of the coin is that people are actually made to feel guilty. You know, I always remember there was a joke by an English comedian called Billy Connolly, who said, I went to a Roman Catholic school. I never really was very academic, but I did get A-level guilt, which I thought was wonderful, this idea that you're constantly made to feel inadequate. It's actually affirming the person, but making sure that isn't turned negatively into making me an abuser of other human beings. Because I am unique, I need to recognise uniqueness in others. And I think that's where religion has a role and has a prophetic voice to postmodern society. You know, we are very egotistical. It's all about me. You know, in the old Christian evangelical sort of cliche, at the centre of sin, the word sin, lies I, me. You know, it's all about me. It's interesting where we're talking about these broad ideas, we can agree that respect, waiting, lawful marriage. What we haven't touched on are issues where maybe that'd be more contentious, such as different sexualities, contraception, you know, what is acceptable even within parameters of a loving, committed relationship. And even within religions, we have difficulty about that, because it comes down to arguing about text and arguing about words. And that's where I think we often find it difficult as religions to articulate a common voice, because we can each read the same set of words and yet bring different meanings to the words.
It's interesting you say that. There's a verse in the Quran which says, those who listen to the word and follow the best meaning in it, those are the ones whom God has guided, and those are the ones endued with understanding. So it's in chapter 39.
The best. Who decides who's the best?
Well, that's, you know, I mean, best, I mean, we know general ideas of what's best. I treat you with respect. I don't become selfish, and I want everything for myself and very little for you. And the general ideas of what is best, you know. But of course, you know, when you get into nitty-gritties, then people will have. Because in the Quran there are, well, it says that there are verses which are clear, and they are the fundamental ones. That's in chapter 3. It's verse 7. It says there are verses in the Quran that are absolutely clear, and they're the important ones. And then there are those which can have, which are called mutashabihat, which means that sometimes they're translated as allegorical or not so clear or whatever. And then the verse goes on to say, in whose hearts is it sort of a disease or something like that, they will follow the sort of meaning, to, in a sense, to distort it to how they want it. But those verses can be debated upon, you know. But when it comes to like gambling, alcohol, eating of pork, those are, you know, quite fundamental in the sense they're quite clear. Nobody's going to argue with you, oh, it doesn't say that, it does say that. So when it comes to marriage as well, it's having sex outside marriage is clearly wrong. That's you know, not as long as, I mean, two people can decide to get married, have witnesses there, and it's actually a civil contract in Islamic sort of teaching. It's not like you have to have tons of people there or whatever. If you are driven to that you want to have sex with each other, I mean, if this is a general teaching, that if someone comes to a leader in the community or anyone, or an imam or whatever, and says that, you know, we're more likely to do this if we don't get married, he's actually obligatory on him to get them married. That's the Islamic teaching. Because it's far worse to have sex outside marriage. You know, so divorce is far better than committing adultery. So these are the teachings. And so if you know that, then you want to have sex, you know, just do the, in Islamic teaching, it's not like you have to have a big, huge ceremony. You have to say, in the sight of God, I want to marry this, and she gives her consent, he gives her consent, and we have at least two witnesses, then that's it. You know, you don't have to have the whole community and so on. Ideally, of course, you should have your parents there, but if you're going to be driven to have sex with somebody unlawfully, then the person has sort of a duty to marry the couple.
But for me, that is the issue isn't having sex, it's the issue of abusing the other person. Because, I mean, there are societies where if you want to have sex with somebody, you marry them and you accumulate, if you can afford them, a number of wives. It doesn't work the other way, you can't accumulate a number of husbands. It's actually the intent that lies behind the deed. It seems to me it's all about love. Jesus said love is the fulfilling of the law. And it's actually about what is this about self-gratification? You know, there's a beautiful object, I desire it, I will have it, irrespective.
No, but it doesn't take away the fact that you love the person, but because you love the person, you want to have sex with them. But you should do it the lawful way. It's, you know, there's teaching of the Prophet, every action, it depends upon your intention. If your intention is bad, if you just wanted to marry this person just to have sex, because the concept of marriage is not about just having sex. There's another verse which says that you find a peace in your partner. If you find loving relationship in your partner, it's to give you that security and so on. So it's not just about, you know, okay, but the fact that it's made easier I think is very good.
Yeah. See, we have a slightly different view across the traditions in this. Jesus was when asked about sex, if you have three wives and they die, which one will be your wife when you get in heaven? And Jesus said that in heaven there's neither giving nor taking in marriage. For Jesus, physical reproduction is something that's limited to the physical existence. So in one sense, it's actually more important about the person, what you're doing, than about the physical act. Because actually, you know, whether we'll have physical bodies, whether we'll be married in heaven, Jesus seems to imply that we won't be married in the sense that we are in earth. It'll be different dynamics, which actually then changes the dynamics of how we deal with each other. Our physical bodies, you know, our physical attractions will wither and grow old. But the person we commit to.
well, the idea of heaven for us is that we're only given certain glimpses of it, but it's not, you know, what's there is going to be totally so sort of out of our, I mean, we can't even imagine it, really. So the glimpses for people who want to have something more concrete. But really, we don't know what it's going to be like. It's going to be the most wonderful and beautiful thing that's going to happen, but we don't really know about it. But on Earth, while we're on Earth, it's a short time compared to the life after. It's like a drop in the ocean. And while we're here, if we act upon the guidance as we've been given, then we are more likely to live a happy life here as well as in the life hereafter.
Well, I don't know much about other religions, have said the truth, so I'll speak about Christianity. From the beginning of time, what the Bible says is we've always had guidelines, and you see, you hear stories where you commit sin and lightning strikes you, or your generations are consumed. When Jesus came, he gave us freedom. Not freedom to go about committing sin, but we're not meant to be slaves as children of God. And I think the world has really messed up what freedom should be like. And as people that know God, and when we know the truth, I think we as Christians, Muslims, I think we're not playing our part. You know, because you don't want to offend someone, you don't want to tell the person, well, sex is bad. Or you say, well, sex is bad, but foreplay, you know, it's good. You know, we've made bystanders because even we as Christians, we really don't want to. We're using up our freedom the way we shouldn't be using it up. So at the end of the day, you know, the truth is that these guidelines were set to govern what human beings should be like. You know, even in our society now, we have policies, the government, they make rules, and we shouldn't divert anyway. We should say the truth. And, you know, it's that's the only way we can really control what happens, control how people, you know, how people relate sexually. You know, if you tell them the truth, then it's up to them to really take what they want out of it. And I feel like stuff like STDs and a lot of these diseases, it's a sort of blessing too. Because, well, for me, well, you know, I hear stories of people in the 70s, you know, where, you know, sex was just the thing, you know, drugs and sex. But I'm sure, it's not that easy anymore to just, well, if you really love your life, you don't need to be Christian or Muslim. You watch TV and you see people die of HIV. You know exactly that, okay, listen, you really don't want to just be sleeping with just anybody. You know, so in itself, diseases have set guidelines to us, you know. But at the end of the day, things you still do that will not give you diseases, maybe foul play, you know, a bunch of stuff which are still wrong. And I think the best thing is to say, you know, as Christians and Muslims, this and this is wrong, and stick to our God. God.
Yeah. I'm actually here more to learn. I work in sexual health, and I'm going to continue to work in sexual health. And a lot of my friends have come to me with different sexual health questions or different things that they're running into. And one of the things that I have friends come to me with is when they struggle being very religious and having sex. And for a handful of them, it is a really great experience, and they're able to kind of have those two things be part of their lives. And for other people, it really has kind of tears at them, and they have this huge struggle that they go through. So I'm here just to kind of hear some different perspectives. So, because I know people are going to continue to come to me with this problem of, I've had three friends in the last year that started having sex for the first time, and they go to church every Sunday, and they're just completely torn up and distraught and struggle. So, as someone who works in the field, I'm trying to learn, what do I do to support these individuals?
Any answers to that?
I don't know if there's like a straight, clear cut. I would be surprised if there was.
But Islamically, I mean, there is a clear answer, which is don't have sex before you're married. Simple. If you're having these feelings, because there's one of the teachings of the Prophet, is that, you know, yes, you have some things, like I was saying, are clear. If you have a problem, look at the Quran, and if you don't find an answer in it, look at the teachings of the Prophet. And the Prophet also said that if you do not find any answer there, then ask your heart. Because if your heart wavers, then there's a problem with it. And we're told, if your heart wavers, keep away from it. And so, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not going to say it's okay just because your heart is saying, oh, you know, I'm struggling with it. Well, it isn't okay, but, you know, if you want to stop having those feelings, then, you know, you should know what's important for you. If the person feels it's important to go to church, for instance, and have the belief in Christianity, then they will have to think twice what they're doing. And as a Muslim myself, though, I've never had anybody come to me with that problem, but, you know, if somebody did, my answer would be, you know, this is quite clear teaching. If you really like this person, get married, you know, have sex, and then all those feelings of guilt and everything will go away, because that's what makes people feel, because they know they didn't do something wrong.
But I deal at the other end with lots of people who got married so they could have sex, and now the marriage isn't working. Certainly young religious people particularly. I've been in higher education now 20 years as a chaplain. I am counselling students who got married at 21 because their religious beliefs said they can't have sex till they get married. 15 years down the road, the person they married at 21 isn't the person they're living with now. And they're actually having even more guilt because the marriage is falling apart. Their religious tradition is that marriages should be made in heaven. So it's actually balancing both the divine imperative and the human reality. I mean, Jesus had this problem about seeing people who were suffering, and did they sin or did their parents sin? And Jesus said neither. You know, sometimes the pain is the place where God is made real. And I think the great danger for us as those of us who have responsibility to religious leaders is that we need to have people to have the confidence to keep talking with us. And I think the moment we actually draw lines in the sand and say, you cannot cross this, my experience sadly has been is that they stop talking. And the moment they stop talking, relationships, both within the community of faith and between the individual and their God, and between the people they have a relationship with, begin to disintegrate. And it seems to me that communication has to be. And that doesn't mean at the end of the day, when you're communicating, you don't have to say to them, this is wrong. Can't you see it's destroyed?
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you don't judge the person, only God can judge the person. And if people, I mean, you know, people. We actually did have a case one about 3 years ago that where, you know, they had done, the girls got pregnant actually. So, and she had a huge dilemma. It's, you know, the boy wasn't concerned at all, you know, he just walked away as he said earlier, and she was having to deal with so much, she wasn't even able to tell her own parents, and she didn't know what to do, and if she does have an abortion, that's like an act of sin, and so on. So yes, you know, and you know, I have spoken to students, and I did speak to those students, but it's not about being judgmental about a person. People do come if they feel that you're someone who listens and gives you the right guidance, as they think that they've come to you for the right guidance, they will still come to you and they'll ask you what to do next, what's the next step. So, you know, whether marriages, people marry for all sorts of reasons, and some marriages last, some marriages don't, and whether you're a religious person or a non-religious person, for me, that's not necessarily an issue. The issue is that when people have done something and they have a problem, then how to go about it next. You know, God is very forgiving. You know, God, in the teachings of Islam, if you come to me with sins up to your neck, God can forgive you. God will forgive you anything. But in this life, if we don't follow the guidance we're also told, then we will suffer for that. And people do suffer. And so, you know, for myself, at least, I can say, you know, the fact that I try to follow the guidance, and I thank God for having given me that.
I think with your, if your friends are coming to you saying that, like, I'm going to church every Sunday and I'm really struggling with the fact that now I'm in a sexual relationship and it's kind of tearing me up, I think it's either the fact that they believe that this is what they should be doing, as in that the church is telling them, well, you should be doing this, and they're not, so obviously there's going to be a major conflict there with what they believe their life should look like and what it actually does. But I think, on a side note, I think the church is too quiet on the issue of sex. I think it's very easy to just say, you should not have sex until you get married. Okay, this is too embarrassing, we're not going to talk about it anymore. And there's a lot of actually really good online resources. The website is www.marshillchurch.org. It's in Seattle, actually, based. And the guy, I think there's a series called The Peasant Princess, and he basically talks about Christianity and, you know, how the Bible views sex. And it's actually really kind of enlightening in some ways, because it brings a lot about actually what God's purpose actually is for us, and that it's more of a kind of a celebration of the fact of why exactly it is that marriages can be so great. And the fact that if the biblical model of marriage is that, you know, a husband is to love his wife as Christ has loved the church, as to give himself up for her, and to, you know, to the point where he would die for her. But actually, when you have that kind of relationship, there is no better way in which to have a sexual relationship. And I think it makes me sad, because I can't think of any other way that I would want to enter into a sexual relationship than to have a man who says, I commit to you, and actually I want to spend my life loving you, and I want to, you know, and I want to enjoy being with you, and I'm not going to leave you next week when you're having an off day, or, you know, you don't want to do exactly what I want, you know. And so I think that maybe some of your friends, if they're struggling and they, you know, they're Christians, if they believe in God and they have a relationship with Jesus, then it could be that it's just because actually their conscience or the Holy Spirit is just telling them that actually this is just not the right thing for you. And that if you're in this relationship with God, then, you know, he's saying, look, I know what the best thing is for you, and this is not it. And so that's why you have such a kind of heartache about it, because actually I think you kind of deep down know that this is not how it's meant to be. And it's either that case or the cases that they're going to church and they actually, you know, and that relationship actually isn't there, and so it's not really, it's just because they feel guilty, because they feel like these are the rules and I'm breaking them. And actually, you know, my advice to them as a Christian is to say, well, actually, you know, really look into who God is, get to know him. And it's only from there that you'll really ever understand why it is you're feeling this. And so I think, you know, the only solution in my mind is kind of give yourself to Jesus and say, look, something's not right here, and I need to sort it out with you. And, you know, it says in the Bible that there's no way that Jesus will refuse you in that place. So,
one thing I love about the Islamic approach, and that is first of all to answer your question, is if someone were to come to you say a Muslim, say, you know, I've done this. But then again, I think that through the Quran and also through examples of how the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, how he dealt with people who came up to him and said to him, I've committed adultery or I've committed fornication, you know, what is going to happen? You know, I love how Islam actually gives those examples. First and foremost, let's take what the Quran says. And let's take God's word, what he says. And God says in the Quran, I hope you don't mind if I say in Arabic and I translate it, is that okay? Because I love it. He says, قُلْ يَا عِبَادِيَ الَّذِينَ أَسْرَفُوا عَلَى أَنفُسِهِمْ لَا تَقْنَطُوا مِنْ رَحْمَةِ اللَّهِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَغْفِرُ الذُّنُوبَ جَمِيعًا. So this is God saying, say, O my servants who have transgressed over themselves. And the word here in Arabic, asrafu, means that they have committed so many sins, so many. You know, the biggest ones that you can imagine. Don't despair from the mercy of God. For God forgives all sins, first and foremost. So there is relief in that when a person knows that I haven't stepped the red line that I cannot step back, because that could be the mentality of a person who has committed such a grave sin. Or in, you know, in their teachings and in their understanding that to have sex outside the boundaries of marriage is something great. So for them, that is something huge. And they might actually fall into despair to think, gosh, how am I going to get rid of this? But the fact is that there is relief and that there is potential in that sin being forgiven, because God can forgive in the same way that he can punish, in the same way that he can, you know, bless and give bounty. Secondly, the example of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he was approached by a man who said to him that I had committed fornication. I did it. And the beautiful example of the Prophet was that he started finding excuses for the man, first of all. He started saying, perhaps you didn't do the whole thing. Perhaps you touched. Perhaps you kissed. Perhaps you hugged. Perhaps you did this. And the man was like, no, 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 I did it. And he said to him, go away and just, you know, keep it to yourself and just seek repentance from him. First of all, you know, don't, you know, publicize it to people as such. If this is something that you did, and if this is something that you are able to control, meaning this is something that it is within your capacity to not let other people know about it, this is something that you've committed, you're feeling guilty about it, if it's tearing them up, then obviously they're feeling guilty about it, then you should keep it within your realm and don't lose that element of faith that tells you that God can forgive that sin. This is the first point that I wanted to make. The second point was the point that you mentioned with regards to the relationship and the tie of the couple, and how in the afterlife, and you know, in your belief, it is, you know, it's a spiritual tie, but there's also a presence for this relationship in the physical world as well. Now, the one thing that I would like to share from the Islamic perspective is that Islam is very pragmatic about the marriage constitution and about human beings as and in general. Islam recognizes that as human beings, in this body that we occupy and in this body that the soul resides in, this body does have needs and it does have desires and it does have lusts. It does have things that it wants to do. You know, human beings love to eat, love to drink. You know, sex is something that a person would want to do. And one thing that it does make sure to clarify is that you should try to seek to satisfy those needs in the correct way. And an example of this is that a man came to the Prophet, peace be upon him, and said to him that, you know, I've married this woman, or that, you know, I have intention to marry this woman. And he said to him, have you looked at this woman? And the man said to him, no. So the Prophet said to him, go and look at her in a correct and lawful way. You know, not to be kind of, you know, do it in a considerate way. In the hope that you will find something.
And love her.
And love, you know, so that her face and her beauty would be pleasing to you as such. So you're not going to walk into a marriage blindly without seeing a person. You know, there should reside in you something, you know, some sort of attraction. There should be some sort of attraction. And so that element should be covered also in the marriage. When you see your husband or when you see your wife, you should think they're beautiful. You should think that they're pleasant for you to see. You wouldn't go and marry someone who you yourself don't find completely attractive. But obviously, attraction in the other sense can grow. Now, whether or not we are up to that spiritual level that allows us to overlook the physical attraction is something else. And I don't think that personally the Muslims who currently live in our time are of that spiritual high that would allow them to overlook this beauty. And one last example that I would give is one example that I would give is a companion of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And his name, I believe, was called Abu Dharr. And he married a woman whom the community thought she wasn't the best of lookers. She was ugly. So they said to him, why didn't you go and marry somebody who is more beautiful? So he said to them, you have no idea how this woman helps me and betters my spirituality. That is what he said to them. She wakes me up at the dead of the night so I could pray and so I could worship. She helps me to fast. She encourages me to give in charity. She does this, she does that, she does that. So she pushes him in so many spiritual ways that was what he was looking for. For him, looks and beauty wasn't of great importance whatsoever because he was after something much more, much, much greater. But we live in a different community and we live in a different site and we by no means have the spiritual strength that those men and those women had at that time.
No, I think we have got people. We have people who go for the personality of the person and for the character of the person rather than just the looks. I mean, you're not always attracted to the looks. You're often attracted to the character and the personality of the person. Mm. You know, so it's not obviously just about.
Of course not. What I mean is it's an element of a whole. It's a portion of a whole. That's what I mean. I didn't mean, you know, entirely. You know, if this person didn't satisfy every box or every checklist, you know, the entire checklist of what you want in that person physically, then you wouldn't marry them, of course not. But I just meant that, you know.
Yeah.
It's actually seeing more in the person, because we actually live in an age where people are taken in by the packaging. Mm. You know, so even our photographs in our fashion magazines have to be airbrushed so that people look absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
The reality is, you know, I look very different now to what I did 20 years ago.
Mm.
But hopefully that which is me has developed and grown. So Paul, the Apostle Paul, one of the followers of Jesus, had this thing that though outwardly we are wasting away, inwardly we're being renewed daily.
Yeah.
And we've lost the habit, we've lost the knack of seeing in one another that thing that is eternal.
Right.
We're swayed by transient things, you know, and beauty is pretty fickle. I had a quote the other day which really, you know, a young, beautiful person is an accident of nature, but an old, beautiful person is a work of art. And I thought that was quite profound. It's about that we actually, we are such a superficial society, and it's all about the packaging, it's all about the So it's all about the way it's sold, and we do that in terms of our relationships. And maybe one of the things that all religious faiths has is the imperative to call people to look at things at last, and not to be fooled by things that are only temporary. Because at the end of the day, we do grow old. You know, the Almighty's taken me back in instalments. He's taken me hair. My teeth are dropping out. My eyesight's going. By the time I die, he'll have most of me already. But that which is me, he's, praise be God, is constantly trying to renew and deepen and grow. And when people learn to see that, they actually find things are too eternal. And that really is where religious faith is at its most powerful, when we actually get people to see beyond the temporary to the eternal. Catch glimpses of heaven.
Mm. Yeah, it just reminds me of that teaching at the Prophet said, if you look for a partner, people often go for a family, people often go for beauty, people go for, what's the third one? Wealth, yeah. So, and lastly, the person who goes for deen, someone's, you know, love and sincerity in their hearts for God, and that's the best person. So that's the thing that you should look for in your partner. And this is precisely what, you know, you've just been saying, that looking beyond, because family, beauty, wealth, transient, whereas, you know, that core of you is what's everlasting, and that's what the Prophet asked us to see in your partner for marriage, which is wonderful.
And even sex falls into that category, because you know, the reality is we can't have sex 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 31 days a month. What happens about the times when we can't? We still belong to each other, we still love each other, we still care. And maybe, you know, people are swayed by money and fame and status, we know that. But maybe there's another false god, and it's called sex.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe we need to add that to the list as religious people. You know, that isn't the real thing that you judge that by, you know?
It's interesting what you said. It's you literally rephrased a verse in the Quran where God says, "Have you seen the one who has taken their desire as their idol?"
I was going
to say that. Yeah,
that's
right.
Just come.
Yeah. Say it again.
Reset. I think I put that verse on my door.
I've seen one who has taken it as his own God, his own desire.
Yeah,
lots of people actually commented that, how useful they found it, actually. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, it's definitely religious beliefs or teachings are definitely good for sexual health.
And there's a strength across the Abrahamic faiths. I know we have differences, and some of them are quite pronounced, but we actually follow in the line of prophets from Abraham through Moses.
Yeah, there's a set doctrine to follow.
Yeah.
And as in one of the points that you made earlier on, which you said that having a set fixed rules is negative. Yeah. When you look at your normal life as a student, you've got set rules. If you go, for example, take a small example, there's set rules over there as well, no eating or drinking or smoking. There are set rules when you're going on a bus. There are always rules, and as human beings, it's nature to be actually given a set of rules.
Yeah.
Can I
But take your accept. The trouble with the rules, if we follow them literally, if I have a diabetic hypo now, you've got to put food and drink into them.
Yeah, of course. I'm talking about.
You know, the great danger with where the words matter more than the principle. Because we take messages of grace from God and we turn them into laws and chains. And that's the
danger. I just want to clarify what I meant when I said that. I think. Basically, my point was that I don't believe that a set list of regulations and rules set on their own is actually going to do anyone any good. Because basically, we are human and we are going to break the rules. No one can say that from birth they've observed every single rule that has ever been put in front of them. That is just practically impossible, and it's not ever going to happen. And so actually, I think, and you know, and as a Christian, I firmly believe that as somebody who, breaks the rules that I believe God has kind of set for me every single day, I'm just so glad that is not, that the reason that I live is not to kind of obey those rules, because actually I realise that the rules are there is because there's a God who loves me and knows what is best for me. And so by following those kind of regulations or, you know, rules for living, that actually I am going to live the best life. So don't get me wrong, I'm not into breaking the rules, because actually I think it has tragic consequences. But I think more my point was is that actually for me, having a relationship with Jesus will empower me to be able to keep the rules. And so I just don't believe that giving somebody a list or a piece of paper that says you must not do that, you must not do that, you must not do that, and give them no way of actually, you know, no kind of goal or tools to help them actually keep those rules,
right,
I just don't believe is helpful. So in some ways, I don't think religious belief is helpful for our sexual health in some ways, because if it is just literally a kind of a religious statement that says you must not do that, I don't think
I don't think people can do that unless they have commitment anyway. I mean, you know, unless you believe that God exists and you believe that what you've been given is the truth. Like, you know, we believe the Quran is the word of God, but most rules have exceptions as well. Like, you're not allowed to eat pork, for instance, but it says if you're going to die, then you're allowed to eat it. everybody must fast if they are, you know, beyond puberty and so on. But those who are ill, those who are elderly, that's all in the Quran as well. Those who, and the breastfeeding mothers and so on. So, you know, there are exceptions when somebody's ill, they can't fast. And somebody's diabetic, mm-hmm. they have to have theirs, so they can't fast. And so on. So, you know, but you're not going to do those things unless you feel there is a commitment, you feel it is the truth, and you do believe it, you know, out of your heart, and that you have that love for God. And so, you know, those who may want to follow the rules without that, it doesn't work, does it? So it has to, it is a package, really, isn't it? And if you don't have that love inside you for God, you're not going to, why do you want to do it? You know, it doesn't make sense.
Jesus said the same, that he said, it says, do not commit murder, but I tell you the truth, if you look at your brother in anger, you commit murder in your heart. It says, do not commit adultery, but if you look at a woman with lust, you commit adultery in your heart. So it's quite easy with rules just to be obsessed with externals.
Yes.
It's actually about what's going on inside.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Prophet also said, like, if you see a person, right, and you feel lust, you know, a woman, say a man sees a woman, and he says, go to your wife. You can fulfill your desire, but, you know, don't carry out something that you shouldn't be. So it's not actually, yeah, some people probably, people do emphasize the external, but it, as a Muslim, for me, it goes hand in hand. It's not just about your outer and the literal way of interpreting things. It's inner and outer, and there's a balance in there on both sides. So you can't emphasize too much of the inner and forget the outer. And whenever they're in a balance, there is a problem. Out of balance, there is a problem. As long as they're in a balance, then you will be successful in both of your lives.
Any other takers?
Looking at the people.
Okay. I just find it astounding how we kind of started off with that. You know, the first question of, you know, is religious belief good for your sexual health? And we've kind of expanded it into, like, is it good for you as a person kind of thing? It's kind of taken on that whole idea and how we're kind of interacting with each other and how, you know, having a grounding religious belief might be important and almost vital to have that proper understanding of each other. And there's so many things that we could talk about. You know, we haven't even touched on the kind of things that you mentioned earlier, you know, like contraception and you know, all
yes,
the other things
yes,
that come
yeah.
with it. We're still taking it as very, as a symbolic act, you know.
Well, the premise actually begins then, to, you know, the first principles actually shape those other discussions, and often the debate never gets back to foundation principles or foundation revelations. You know, it becomes obsessed with the letters and not the spirit.
Yeah, because when I came to this, I expected, you know, say, like, so, condoms, you know, and it would be like, okay, so, you know, how does it work, you know, within, you know, your kind of experiences as religious people, you know? And, like, you know...
How do condoms work?
No, but you know what I mean? Like
you better explain, to Brad, because she needed some with holes in.
Yeah. There is a story there.
Well, yes, this is an interesting topic. And, I mean, contraception, we have teachings of the Prophet again, you know, mentioning that people actually practice that. What do they call it? Coitus interruptus, isn't that how it's put? So it's not something, you know, that you can't do. It depends on the situation, depends on, you know, people. So
and it depends on the love for the person as well you've got. You know, if your wife has had 3 or 4 children, another one will kill her.
Yes.
It's not much of a witness to say,
yes.
Well, you know.
Mm.
And sometimes, the trouble with principles sometimes is that principles lead to destruction.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when Jesus had this woman thrown in front of him who was caught in the act of adultery, the principle was that she should be stoned to death. And Jesus refused to address with the issue of principles. He turned it around and said, okay, let's work on this premise, principles matter. Here's the foundation principle. Anybody who's perfect can throw the first stone.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and it's a coming back to you saying about judging.
Yes.
I think sometimes we need to recognise that principles.
Well, yeah, I mean, going back to sort of following on to from what you said, I mean, in the teachings of Islam, there are certain very few punishments, which in fact stoning to death is not mentioned in the Quran. It was a practice, the Jewish practice, that happened at the time. Some of the punishments, the criminal punishments are mentioned, they're actually called hadood punishments. In fact, this hadood means it's like a boundary. They sit on the boundaries. They actually act more like deterrents, because a judge, you know, has to take all the evidence into account. He has to have someone who has knowledge of the principles of the teachings of God, and then he passes it on, and there has to be a lot of that. What God teaches is sort of played out through humans, right? And humans make mistakes. Humans will get things wrong. So, and this the Quranic principle of going back, which is, I believe, the principle of all the messengers of God, Jesus, Abraham, Moses, and so on, was of justice and peace. So you bring about peace and justice in society. You don't. If the spirit of the law outweighs the literalness of the law, you know, in our courts, you know, they say, "Oh no, technicality, let him off. We knew he was guilty." But you know, but the spirit of the law is far more important than the actual, you know, in the sense wording, because there's huge examples. The wordings, the early caliphs, you know, they said, "Oh, we're not going to apply this because there's a famine, or we're not going to do this or that." And there's a huge number of examples, but obviously those who have little knowledge is a dangerous thing, you know. So that's what ends up happening. But as far as abortion or, when a mother's life is in danger, you're not allowed to have abortion because mother's life comes first before the child. And there are cases where people, generally speaking, abortion is not. It's like killing a human being. But there are cases, or you know, when you can't, when you have to, or if you do, then God is forgiving. But you know, you can't just think it's okay, or because I'm a woman and it's my body, I can, you know, do whatever I like with it. That, you know, you have to have a balance of understanding that you are going to give a life to a new human being, and that's inside you. You can't abuse that. So there's a lot of teachings in that area as well. You know, but God is always asking us: do you not think? Do you not hear? Do you not understand? Use your intellect. You know, don't just. There's verses throughout the Quran.
Absolutely.
Throughout the Quran, about one third of the Quran is actually asking you to use your brains for what you do. And there's a verse actually that says that on the Day of Judgment, people will come to God and say, "Had we used our intellects, we wouldn't be in the fire now." Don't use their brains.
Oh, no, maybe you've just touched on something that we started with at the start, which is ironic, I suppose. Of maybe religion is there to make us think, to ask these questions, so we don't just think about ourselves, you know. There's this constant process of reevaluation of where you are in kind of your community in relation to other people. I don't know. Is there anything else that people would like to bring up? Because I do know that, like, I mean, we could probably be here for hours. You do know that, don't you? Like, all the topics
are
kind of right in.
I was wondering, are we going to finish soon?
I just want to say that Islam restricts sexual behavior before marriage, but it also kind of say encourages in a subtle way. Like, Islam says marriage completes religion, and also your wife and you yourself are like a cloth to your partner.
Garments.
Yeah.
Of each other.
And if you clearly think about it, it's kind of, you want a partner, which is not like a one-off partner. You want the sexual relationship enveloped in love. So that's, you know, as a 21-year-old, that's what I want. To have a partner, my first partner, to be in a marriage, and should I have a sexual relationship, and to be with her for a lifetime. That's what I'm looking for right now.
Inshallah.
the phone number after. Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming to this lovely room and giving us your souls, as it feels like a little bit, onto this recording. Thank you very much. It's been very, very interesting. And we didn't even get to, you know, talk about condoms and all that kind of stuff. But maybe next time, you know. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.